Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yo! Welcome into the House of L podcast. I'm Lawrence Holmes. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast today. I'm excited for this week because I got to mix some things that I don't usually talk about with things that I talk about all the time with our guest on today's episode. I got to mix in a little bit of political conversation with White Sox baseball. I'll explain what I mean coming up in a minute and why my guest, like, it literally says the first thing in his bio. It says it's White Sox, which is amazing. Not his actual bio from Channel 9, but his Twitter bio. It literally says White Sox, Star Trek, R&B. Those are all things that I'm down with. As a matter of fact, me and Maggie need to record another episode soon. Now that I'm done with Star Trek Discovery, Maggie and I are going to do that. And this guy that I'm going to have on the show, on the podcast, momentarily, he's actually at some point going to be one of our guests when we do our Star Trek episodes. I'd like to let you know that this podcast, I feel like PBS funding for this podcast is brought to you by Homeside Financial. That's right. If you or a family member are looking to purchase a new home, you need to do what I did and call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender. Meet Aria. She's 30, a web designer, making $90,000 a year, who is purchasing her first home, so she called her dad, Bob, for advice. Bob advised Aria to call the only lender that he trusted, Team Hochberg, Hart. He wanted Team Hochberg to help his youngest daughter purchase her first home. Aria followed dad's advice and called Team Hochberg for a free consultation. Team Hochberg answered all of Aria's questions, pulled her credit, and preliminarily approved her for a mortgage, and introduced her to real estate attorney David Schluter. Team Hochberg has helped thousands of podcast listeners like Bob help their kids, like Aria, understand the home buying process, locate a home, and secure their first mortgage. But they can't help you if you don't call them. I've been trying to tell you to call this man. You need to call this man. Call him. 855-56-DAVID or visit at 56david.com. That's 855-863-2843 or visit 56david.com. You can check out David. He hosts a radio show called House Smarts every Saturday morning. Homeside Financial's equal housing lender, NMLS 1124061. He helped me. He can help you. He helped Aria, which is even more important. Tamon Bradley is a serious dude. He's just, despite what it says in his Twitter bio, and you should be following him at Tamon Bradley, he does incredible political reporting for Channel 9 in Chicago, WGN television. I mean, I've known Tamon, like, we have a bunch of mutual friends. He's a White Sox fan. I'd see him at White Sox games all the time. We had talked about doing something, but throughout the 2020 election, he was doing the type of political journalism that I think we need to do more of. Like, it was issue oriented. Like, here's what the issue is. This is what you're going to be voting on. And this is what people who are for it say. This is what people who are against it say. And here's a deep dive in whether or not what they say is true. He did that with a bunch of different topics. And I was so impressed. Like, I was so, not that I have any right to be proud, but I was so proud, like, watching him. And the crazy part is that Channel 9 would give him a lot of space. Like, that was the part to me that was insane. That they gave him space on the 9 o'clock news to spend 4 or 5 minutes. Like, ordinarily, you don't get that much time in TV, in local TV. You get 2 or 3 minutes. But they were giving him more than that, and it was very helpful in figuring out some things. Him exploring topics that are not easily digestible. And as you hear me say to him, I think that politics needs to do more of that. Like, media needs to do more of explaining the politics that they are discussing. And I really respect the way that he and his producers went about covering the 2020 election. And it's explained when we get inside of this. But I also just really like talking with him because he's a crazy White Sox fan. And now I understand why. Like, now I get it after talking to him. So this is us hanging out. I also found out, I didn't know this, that we went to rival high schools, kind of, because really HF has no rival. But you get what I'm saying. So this is me sitting down with one of the smartest guys in news in Chicago, Tamon Bradley. I really thank you for doing this, man, because I know that you're crazy busy.
No worries. I'm happy to do it. Thanks for thinking of me. You have A-listers, so I don't know why the hell you want me.
I wanted to get into your career path and stuff. And I mean, I know that you've had a long career already, like, doing important stuff, covering the White House, like, all this stuff, covering the nation, and now being, like, hyper-local focused. I'd love to know what kind of sparked you wanting to be in news in the first place.
So, you know what it was? I always had an interest in current events and history. I always liked to know what was going on. Like, my dad would always read the paper, and so I would grab it. I wouldn't read it, but I liked to grab it because it seemed like there was important stuff in the newspaper, right? For me, what happened was I found the 2000 presidential election, Al Gore, George W. Bush, and I was just obsessed with following everything that was going on. So that was back in 2000, you know, so that's what, 20 years ago, I would have been 17, I guess 16 for most of that, and then turning 17 as they were doing the recount and having confusion over who was going to win Florida. And I just really got into watching cable news, and I obsessed over that contest. And then I found local news, and I loved watching the stations in Chicago. And I was so dorky that I cut out pictures. I printed pictures of all of the anchors and reporters.
What?
So I probably now work with people who were at one time on my wall when I was growing up. And so I put their pictures up, you know, people like Charles Thomas, John Drury, Diane Burns, Warner Saunders. They were all on my wall. And then I found network news. So it went cable, local, and then network. And I obsessed over Tom Brokaw, Peter Jennings, and Dan Rather. So anyway, I fell in love with politics and then the personalities that delivered the news.
Was there ever a time when you thought that you'd be doing anything else?
So I went back and forth. I did drama in high school. And
which high school?
I went to high school at Ridge Central. Which I know you're familiar with, Lawrence.
So we got like mad beef. Okay, yeah, right down Governor's Highway. All right.
Up the street. The bigger high school up the street is where you went.
Yes.
So I did six plays in high school. That's something people don't know about me. Played Dracula, Helen Keller's father, Captain Keller. I did a lot of cool stuff. And so I thought I maybe wanted to be an actor, but I didn't like my teeth. And I felt like you had to have perfect teeth to be an actor. So that was always a big hang up for me. That was an insecurity. And I also, I maybe thought I might want to go into politics, but once I got into news and broadcasting, I went hard and I just knew that's what I wanted to
do. When do you think the light clicked on, when you're like, man, this is it? Cause it's funny. Your place is the place where the light clicked on for me, because I was in the middle of deciding between whether I wanted to go be in the classroom, whether I was going to go to law school and then, you know, go into the Navy, or whether I was going to stick with broadcasting. And my internship at Channel 9 was the moment where I was like, this is it. Like, I kind of thought this might be it, but no, legit, like, this is it. It was pretty great because at the time it was 97 and 98, and I was covering the Bulls. Like, I was helping out with championship Bulls Michael Jordan stuff when I was there at Channel 9.
Which is really cool. Yeah, I definitely remember that. You know, they like to say of Chicago, we have these cold winters, so all you had to do was to watch the Bulls, and that was true. Not sure what we do these days, because it hasn't been real watchable over there on Madison Street lately. But so the other thing I should add, I think you can relate to this. I loved baseball growing up and still do, and I was a shortstop, but I just wasn't committed. The acting tripped me up. I mean, there was a time I think I probably wanted to be a baseball player, and I loved the White Sox. But I just, you know, I found other stuff. I got distracted and I wasn't focused on it. And so that's when that acting thing came up. And then I went over to the journalism. For me, it was people. I guess I've always had like this voice. And so people would say, yeah, you've got the voice for it. And when I get interested in something, Lawrence, I obsess, I go hard. And so I watched every newscast possible. I started reading news and I just started obsessing over it. And I mean, that was the moment that I knew. I also went to a broadcast camp at Bradley University down in Peoria, and they trained us on the jobs that you can have in a newsroom. And then at the end of the camp, I think it was a week long, at the end of the camp, they picked us to do various jobs, and I was picked to be the anchor. So, I mean, you know, here's a guy who's, I guess I was after my sophomore year of high school, and he's picked to be the anchor for this high school broadcast. That's pretty cool. And a name drop here too. Amara Enya, the former mayoral candidate, was at that same broadcast camp. She was probably picked to be the executive producer of The Boss. I don't remember her role, but so I've known her for a while.
That would make sense, though, considering how sharp she is.
Exactly. She better be in charge.
That she might be in charge. Like, when I hear you talking about acting now, it almost feels like if someone were to offer you an opportunity to do some acting, you might you might drop everything and do it.
You know, the honest to goodness truth, Lawrence, I was not good. I like to think I was a pretty good baseball player. So I could create a character, and I could do things that were entertaining on stage, but me circa high school, I was not telling the story, right? Like, that's the whole point of acting. You create the characters to tell the author's story or the screenwriter's story, and each scene is a story and a decision is made at the end of that. Anyway, that type of advanced level thinking wasn't what I was doing. I was just creating a character, somewhat freestyling, and just having a good time with it. And so, no, I don't think I could be an actor. I think I probably found the right career.
How seriously did you take the baseball?
Well, I now know. You only know what you know, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you're serious, you probably have a swing coach. You probably have your family make a tape, and they pitch that to scouts and agents. I didn't do any of that. To me, it was just fun. And because, again, when I'm into something, I go hard. I was into it more than just guys who were good athletes who played it because they also played football and they played other stuff. You know, I watched every game I could, every, you know, anytime I've been, and I still to this day, whenever there's the White Sox are on, I watch if I'm home. And, you know, and sometimes it worked now because we have technology where you can fire it up on your phone and whatnot. You know, I'll be anchoring the news and have it on in the studio. So I watched a lot of baseball. I did it. I loved to play. I gave it my all. But I look back at like the things that you need to do to be a professional, frankly, or to get a college scholarship or whatever. I wasn't doing those things.
Okay, that's fair enough. I can appreciate that. What made you make your choice for college?
So I went to Howard University in Washington, D.C. Funny story about that. So growing up, I always had like a Howard sweater that had some grass stains on it. And I would wear that. And people are like, oh, Howard, what do you know about Howard? I would say, not a whole lot, right? But I would later learn what an HBCU was and sort of some of the history of Howard. But Lawrence, you know, people on campus and people who are my friends from Howard, they have these dramatic stories about they needed to go there because they needed to pledge whatever, because, you know, every man or woman in their family was a member of this sorority or fraternity. And so they have some dramatic story, you know, the most important doc, the doctor that saved their life graduated from. I just wanted to get as far away from home as possible.
Fair enough.
And Washington, D.C. had the politics. It had, you know, it was the center of power. There were these great internship opportunities. So it just made sense. And it was the only place I applied to. And I look back at that, and that's pretty stupid. That was pretty, you know, and I applied for early action. And to take you back to when I was a high school senior. So this was 2001, right? And so I'm applying in November of 2001, a couple of months after 9/11. And I send off the application for early action. And I get back a letter that it was delayed, lost because of the anthrax scare. And so for some of the younger listeners to the podcast, basically that's a dangerous poison that was sent around after 9/11. It was sent to like news organizations, various places, and people were very scared about it. Anyway, so it delayed the mail. And so all my friends knew where they were going, U of I or wherever it was. And I did not find out I was accepted until April. It was my dad emailing the admissions department, hey, what's going on? And they wrote back, yeah, you've been accepted. One place, applied for one place. That's kind of how I am. All in, all or nothing.
So, okay, a couple things. First of all, if you wouldn't have gotten into Howard, what would have happened?
Well, I would have been an actor, of course.
Like, I would have gone to the batting cage immediately and started working on my swing.
Yeah, but, you know, funny story, too, about the baseball. So, you know, always played with a group of guys that I grew up with through Pony League. I would actually say my favorite baseball was Pony League. There's just something about that level of baseball. But anyway, so I played freshman year. Struggled a bit for what I expected based on what I had done at the lower levels. But again, got caught up in acting and actually decided to not play with the high school team during the regular season. I would play with the team during the summer, so I missed sophomore, junior years so that I could do the acting. And then I went back because we ended up hiring, Rich Central hired Marvin Freeman, who was a big league pitcher. He actually pitched for the White Sox.
Yeah, he's a good man. I've had a couple of really cool conversations with Marvin over the last few months.
I love that guy. So what was great about him as a coach is he was so near still being a big leaguer that the way he talked to us, the way he disciplined us, you know, it was like, basically you could do whatever you wanted just as long as you didn't mess up. And he used to and he was a pitcher. So his emphasis was not on hitting. His coaching for hitting was, it ain't hard, guys, let's go. And it was just wonderful to play for, you know, a guy who had been a big leaguer, and it was loose and it was fun. So anyway, I went back and played senior year. And, you know, he didn't trust that I still had game because basically, I guess they don't consider it varsity if you're playing for the summer team. And so the competition, I guess, in theory, isn't as good as during the regular season. So he batted me ninth for our first game of the year.
Wow. And the disrespect.
mad disrespect. And so in the second game of the year, you know, I'm up there, I'm batting ninth, I'm swinging. And, you know, I take a not a great swing. And he says to me, he's coaching third because that's, you know, that's what they do. The skipper will do in high school, often will coach third. And he says to me, Bradley, swing like a man, swing like a man. So the next pitch, and I'm glad that my father was there in the stands to witness this, I knock it out of the park. And so I'm rounding the bases. He goes to high five me, and I say to him, was that man enough for you?
Nice.
And only homer that year, too.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do. All right, let me go back to D.C. for a second. What's it like to be a college student in the aftermath of 9/11 in D.C.?
The world was so different back then, Lawrence. It was, you know, the class that was ahead of me, I think, was impacted more because they were afraid to walk on campus. They were not sure what in the world was going on. And for when you go and you're a freshman and you're wide eyed and you're like me, really not having been many places in life until college, I'm just soaking it all up and taking in everything that I can from the experience. I mean, we even had there was a DC Beltway shooter. There was a father and son going around and they configured a vehicle and they were shooting people out of this vehicle and nobody knew where the shots were. Anyway, it was this big scary thing. I was so disconnected from that because I'm on campus and I'm learning my way around Washington and I'm just as excited as can be. And so I didn't feel a lot of the nervousness that I think certainly my parents did, being in Washington at, at the time where we thought could still be a terrorist target. So yeah, you don't think about that stuff when you're young and dumb.
For sure. All right, I want to fast forward because I know that our time's limited, but I want to get to some stuff that you've been doing at the professional level. There are two things, and one of them happened just the other day, but I want to go back to something that you did during the election that I thought was some of the best journalism that I've seen getting us ready for the election, and that was your breakdown of the fair tax. Mm. I was honestly, like, as I was looking at my watch, I was like, man, they're giving Taman a lot of time to get this done. What was it about that? Because now that I'm talking to you about you throwing yourself into something, now I'm seeing it from a totally different perspective. I think that you were doing fan service, like you were doing service for the viewer, but I also think that you yourself were so interested in it, it came across in the piece. So what made you say, this is something I need to sink my teeth into?
So Lawrence, in TV news, and why I think what makes what we do special is it is short and quick, and you see the images and you feel a certain way when you're watching good TV journalism. And so, but in politics, what often happens is it's rushed. It's just so-and-so says that, the other side says this, and then you're done. And so at WGN, because we do the most news in the market and our broadcasts are longer, you can get away with longer stories. And so whereas my competition at Channel 5 or Channel 7, their story has to be a minute and a half, at WGN, I can take 9 minutes and talk about tax policy.
Right.
And so you're darn right, I milked that. And some of that was me like, let me show you everything you need to know. There's nothing I love more than when I've figured out something and I find a way to like share it with people. Like that's what I love most about it, is here's what I know. And so I wanted an explainer of this graduated income tax, like why the governor wanted to do it, what the opposition was saying, how much money was being invested by both sides of the argument, for and against. And I wanted to show people what the potential tax rates would be, how it would change things. And I just wanted like everything you would get in a newspaper article to be on TV. And I try to even do that in shorter stories, you know, that are 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes, because often we just condense things, we shorten things, we simplify things too much in TV. But not everybody's reading the paper. You're not getting everything that you need to know. And so, so I'm taking advantage of the fact that you can get away with that at WGN and trying to really give people a lot of vegetables. And I just love that I can get away with that.
I actually thought that I found myself, and I think I reached out to you too. Like, I found myself thinking, you know, if there was more of this, people would be so much more informed on this. Like, it became a hot button topic, and I'm not sure that everyone was well read on the subject. And I felt like it even, because I know that there's a comparison of what happened in Arizona. Like, I even thought that there were, for the people that wanted it to pass, I thought that the way that they went about presenting it might have even been wrong. It didn't speak to exactly what it was. And it, I don't even know that the average Illinois resident voter could name what it actually is, what it actually said on the ballot, because there was so much noise when it came to the commercials for and against it.
That's true. And it ultimately failed. And it was always a tough sell because, you know, it needed more than a simple majority. And it's tax policy, right? I think a lot of people were just automatically suspicious. Like, wait a minute, government wants to do what? And it wasn't necessarily raising taxes. It was allowing the legislature the ability to raise taxes on higher income earners. But you're absolutely right. I mean, it drives so much of what we're seeing today with who we vote for. And
enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Gets in office and decisions that are made is that the citizens are just not informed. And it's not always people's fault, right? You're living your life. You're trying to do the best you can. You're on information overload. There are various platforms, but it's our job to make interesting what's important. And if you get an opportunity, you get a platform like that where you can have some fancy graphics and you can show people, here's how much you're going to pay under this proposal. You got to do it.
What was your pitch to the producers and your news director to say, hey, I need some time with this particular subject. I need some resources. I'm going to talk with some people. What was that like? And were they open to it
on this particular topic? Yes, because we were having discussion about what are the important races we should cover and what are the important issues of the election. And how do we do that in COVID? And so really, they were interested in the topic and I was interested in the topic. And I think they knew I was going to do what I do, which is, basically make it a newspaper story and put it on TV. And so they were very receptive to it. And the feedback was good. What I liked, and I think we're in the business of truth. It's not about balance and if somebody says you were pursuing fair and balance, I think you should be somewhat suspicious of that. You should be pursuing truth. But what I liked is both sides, people for it and against it, immediately wrote me like, that was great. That was so smart. And I was like, okay, I guess I've hit that sweet spot that, you know, people for and against it liked it and thought it was informative.
Where do you think as an electorate we can get smarter? Because there's so much noise to mind. Like it's so hard to for people to get out of their own way. And you end up in some cases voting against your own interests because of the echo chambers. Like how can we do a better job media wise of telling some of these stories and finding some of that truth and then getting it to the people?
Well, I'll say this because we have been criticized a lot over the last decade, 15 years. And then of course with fake news becoming a term that's associated with what we do in an attack on mainstream media. I often don't get defensive when I hear the criticism or really push back because I do think we've come up short. And I do think we've needed to be better. And I mean, there are things we can't control, right? And that is that social media has made it very easy for people to get information, and it's user friendly, and it's tailored to what's most convenient for you. But it's our charge to figure out how do we make ourselves relevant? How are we telling stories that impact people's lives? And so I think we've got to stop looking at ratings. We've got, you know, I mean, I think it's important because I think you want to reach as many people as possible, but it can't drive what kinds of stories you're doing. You can't say, okay, as we do in local TV news, all right, you know, it's the sweeps period. Here's when we give you the special reporting. No, we ought to have our special units up investigating and looking at things year round. And, you know, you need ownership that invests in journalism. You know, the output is enormous at WGN. And so it's a challenge for me to do the story like I did with the graduated income tax because I'm so busy. Good journalism requires that you have time to provide context, that you have time to get the complete story. And so I think we've got to be better. And I think that comes from the top down, from the leadership, from the people who own us, knowing that it's a public service. It's not just about making money. It's about making sure that people have information so that they can make informed decisions.
For the student that wants to go into covering politics, especially local politics, what tip can you provide them?
Well, I would say dive in and know that you don't necessarily have to follow the conventional path. I certainly did not. 3 weeks after I graduated Howard, I went to ABC News, a network. That's not usually what you do.
Right.
I didn't start on air. I started there as a producer was the title, but I was essentially an off-air reporter and I covered politics there. And it was an unconventional path to get me to skip some steps where I didn't have to go work in a small place in local news or work, you know, assignment desk or something like that. I thought outside of the box of a way to get on the on a beat that I was passionate about, which was politics. And then I would figure out later how to make my way on air. The other thing I would say too is make yourself valuable. When you go to school, don't maybe study journalism. I studied journalism, but like if you study economics or science or business, these are topics that you can become an expert in. And that can be what you cover, what you know, and that'll make you more valuable. And so when I got to WGN, I kind of saw right away that I could carve out a niche doing politics because I had done national politics at ABC.
The other thing that I thought that you did a great job with is Kim Fox. Like I think that she is one of the most interesting political figures that has come across this area in a really long time. And you talk about polarizing, like there are polarizing elements to her. And it was interesting to see you navigate some of the inner party fighting that's going on between the mayor and Kim Fox and the superintendent. when you have someone like that, that you get an opportunity for a long form interview with, but you know that you've got to make sure that you can distill it down for the viewer. What's your approach to try and get your questions answered?
So let me first of all say, when I got to WGN, I after had been on the job a couple of months, and I'm just general assignment at that point. And my shift started at 2 p.m. And so I went to our assignment desk. I said, all right, what do you guys have for me today? And they said, okay, you're going to City Hall to interview the mayor. The interview's at 2:30. And I thought, that's not a good way to do that. And so that really changed. And I did fine. But, you know, Rahm Emanuel, you know, he hazed the heck out of me. And I did the best I could to be as prepared as I could in half hour. But I was not prepared. And I thought, what a missed opportunity. It is important when we go interview the mayor or the state's attorney or the governor, because the average citizen doesn't get an opportunity to do that. And mm-hmm. you're there representing the people of the state, the city, the county. And so you better be prepared. You better know your stuff. And it was a moment that really changed everything for me. I said, that'll never happen again. And at the time, WGN didn't have a political reporter. And so I would, in the months to come, push really hard to make that my beat and then ultimately become the political reporter. Because I thought, you better know what's going on. You better be ready and prepared. And we can't be winging it. We can't sort of, okay, I read the paper every other day. No, you better have sources. You better know what's relevant and what matters. So for an interview like that, the Fox one that you're referring to, it was kind of, all right, what's been on my mind? I'll often write down questions that may come up later and I'll save them. But for me, it was just what is this moment in the news cycle? Where are we? And in her case, she had won re-election. So it's okay. All right. What are you going to do differently? You've had your critics. They see kind of our violence problem different than you do. Let's talk about that. And then also, when someone makes themselves available for an interview, it's usually because these are hard interviews to get. They usually have something they want to talk about, correct, something they want to say. And so I'm adamant about listening. Like, all right. And I won't directly say, okay, why did you call me here? Well, why did you actually agree? You know, I've called 20 times. Now you want to do the interview. But I'll just like set them up to because I think it's important that we let them say whatever they want to say, and then we put it into context.
What did you take away from that sit down?
Well, that she believes that she's right. And so she, of course, is a reform state's attorney, and she wants to make sure that the county rights what she sees as the wrongs of the criminal justice system, whether that's record expungement for small level cannabis possessions, or getting justice for people who've been the victims of police misconduct and things like that. And maybe looking for diversion if it's something like shoplifting or crimes like that, while being tougher on gun offenses. And she's going to continue that. But she also thinks, whereas there has been a lot of finger pointing and a lot of blame has been directed at her, there's this perception she doesn't prosecute offenders, and that, you know, gun offenders, and they get back, you know, and it's a revolving door. They're in and out of jail without her prosecuting them. She says the stats don't indicate that, and that there are these other systemic issues driving our violence. And it's in her mind, a lack of investments in certain neighborhoods, lack of opportunity. And she is adamant that there's so many things that happen before you pull that trigger. And everyone collaboratively has to work together to address those issues. And so it's easy after a night of looting to come out and say, these are the repeat offenders, and you know, that they do this because they know there are no consequences. But in fact, there's a lot more to it. And it is the charge of everyone in the community to really figure that out so that you can reduce the violence.
Can I pitch you on an idea? And forgive me if you've already done something similar to this.
No, please.
I think that it would be interesting to have someone like you dig into how much police misconduct have cost taxpayers? Because I think that it's interesting. Like, I brought it up. I remember after the Laquan McDonald video, I talked about it on the air about how much money the city of Chicago had spent in the last decade. And this, at the time, I think it was like $500 million.
Yeah, yes, it was.
On police misconduct. And I think that there are a group of people that think that it doesn't affect them because it doesn't affect them. Like, it's not anyone that they know. It might not be someone that's in their neighborhood. But it ends up eating us all up. Even if you don't have – if it's not the compassion button that you can hit or the injustice button that you can hit, the idea that you have to pay for that, and then you go, well, wait, why am I getting taxed? Why are red light cameras being turned back on? Like, all of those things play into it, and I'm not sure that we, Media Capital M in Chicago, have done a good job of making everyone understand how all of those things fit together.
Yeah, look, here's what we know, because we live in this city, we know this city. There are neighborhoods that sparkle. They are clean, they are nice, they are safe. There are other neighborhoods that have challenges, where there's not a grocery store, where the school building is dilapidated, where there's not jobs and opportunities. And that is a big piece of Chicago's problems. And it goes back decades. And you're right. Look, the police, obviously, it's a very difficult job, right? We have unique crime challenges in Chicago. But pre-Laquan McDonald, you know, the police force, you could say needed to be professionalized, right? They all had different service revolvers. You know, you look at all of the things that the Police Accountability Task Force and the suggestions that were made there. It was enormous, the reforms that were needed. And a lot of those reforms have taken place to their credit. And it is a better police, you know, department today than it was before Laquan McDonald. But it was ancient in its approach and how it interacted with citizens. It was not the social compact that we've come to expect and that exists elsewhere in the country, frankly. And so we're looking at that, and reform is happening. But obviously, when you look at the wrong raid that happened recently, it didn't happen recently, but we learned about it. We still have a long way to go, but I think that's a great topic, because there has been a lot of police misconduct, and it certainly doesn't help, because it's one of the reasons the murder clearance rate is so low. You need the community to come forward with witnesses. They have to agree to cooperate with police and prosecutors. But if that trust isn't there, then that's not going to happen.
I thank you so much for your time, man. I really appreciate it. I know that you are super busy and spinning a lot of plates, but I thought this was incredibly informative, and I thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. It was an honor.
Yeah, we didn't even get a chance to really, really talk about the White Sox. So wait, before I hit the stop record button, I'll ask you, how excited are you for the 2021 White Sox?
I'm fired up, man. Listen, I know people are concerned about La Russa, but I like it. We know he's a winning manager. He'll be able to figure it out. I don't worry about him relating to the players. It is an upgrade over Rick Renteria. I liked him anyway. I like the Lance Lynn signing. The pitching staff's going to be terrific. We'll get Kopech. We'll have Garrett Crochet as well. Whether they're in the bullpen or in the rotation, the offense is terrific. I expect big things, and I hope that we get to go to the ballpark this year. Let's all get vaccinated and get out there. But it's been tough, man. It was hard to watch those games. You remember in the middle of the last decade where we never scored runs and Alexei Ramirez is, you know, batting sixth and, you know, his on base percentage is .280. I mean, it was, and I liked Alexei, but it was brutal to be a White Sox fan over the past decade. So I'm ready to roll.
I appreciate that, sir. Have a wonderful rest of your night. And thank you so much for doing this.
You're welcome.
So that was the fun conversation that I got to have with Tamon Bradley, and we got to talk about the White Sox, and he's pumped up for the 2021 season. I'm optimistic, but I am very cautiously optimistic. As we're recording this, I don't think that they've done quite enough, but we'll see. We shall see. The more that I think about the interview with Tamon, the more I feel like the stuff that he did during the election was even more valuable. It's even more valuable. He's right. The point that he made about the electorate not being as informed as it could be, I think is an important point. I think that he's taking the right steps to try and fix some of those problems. And some of that stuff is just inherently, it feels like it's too far gone in our political discourse now. That all you have to do your research on something is figure out what someone in your tribe, whoever tribe you're in, says about it. And then that's the opinion that you adopt. I think that we've all allowed conservative, liberal, big C, big L, Democrat or Republican, big D, big R, to help shape our opinions for us. And we sometimes don't take into, it's my opinion, that the electorate doesn't take into account how these things are going to actually affect them. It's almost like we're always fighting for the bigger idea or ideal scenario for something instead of, well, wait, am I voting against my own interest? There's a real history of that in the United States going back a long time, pretty much to the inception of it, where there are people who are voting against their own interests because of their interest, if that makes any sense. That's why, to me, what Tamon is trying to do and what Channel 9 is allowing him to do, I think is important. And I hope that they continue to let him do it. I hope that they understand that it is appreciated when someone goes and digs even deeper into a subject matter, the way that he's dug deeper into political issues that affect us locally, you know, from a municipality standpoint, statewide, and from the national elections. The local elections, I actually think there needs to be more of an emphasis on the people who are trying to run for office. And we do need to dig into some of the hot button issues that are going to be on ballots. It seems as if to me that those are things, like, we've gotten away from it. And I think that part of the reason that we've gotten away from it is the way that newspapers, television stations, even radio stations are constructed. Radio stations are probably the best places still. Like, a place like GN Radio or WLS or BEZ are probably the best places to get really in-depth on some of these issues, because you can talk them through and there isn't as big of a time limit. But my goodness, a lot of the coverage politically seems to revolve around the arguments. And I don't mean that in a stand and deliver type way. Like, the stuff that Tamon is talking about, the way that he goes about doing it, those are the types of conversations that we should be having about politics. Not just, well, this politician said this about this politician. And then it becomes this kind of back and forth that's so, I don't know, it's counterproductive to us getting some of the answers that we need and deserve as taxpayers. And I wasn't kidding about that pitch that I gave him. Like, the idea of police brutality and people thinking that it doesn't affect them. Well, if you look at police misconduct in Chicago over the last 15 years, you're talking about close to $1 billion that taxpayers have had to pay out. What happens if that money, you're probably not going to do $1 billion, but what happens if a portion of that money is paid to police? If we use that to better train and, more importantly, better pay police officers, what happens if a portion of that money is spent adding social workers to CPS? Do we see a drop in crime? Because the way that we've done policing, specifically in Chicago and overall in the United States, hasn't really worked the way that we prefer it to work. At least, ideally. There are some people who say the system is working just fine. But think about the flight of people from Chicago, which I do think has been a little bit overblown. Think about the type of services that the city could do if it wasn't always a budget crunch. And part of the reason that it's a budget crunch is because your city is paying out settlements to people who have been wronged by the police force. So I hope he digs deep on that. But to me, it's the economics of it is pretty simple. There's a lot of money that's being spent by the city to settle with victims of police brutality. And that money could be put into our roads. It could be put into our schools. It could be put into the police department itself. But we rather chase it afterwards and then have to screw everybody over and say, well, we don't have the money for these services. Why don't you? You find it when you have to make a settlement. Why not be preemptive? All right, I'm done being on the soapbox, but those are the types of things that talking with Taman made me really think about hard. And it was good to be able to talk with him about this and hang out and enjoy having a conversation on a bunch of different levels, including him being a crazy White Sox fan. So watch him. He's really good on Channel 9. I'm telling you, just check out his work, man. I'm telling you, it's worth your time. I appreciate your support. Big thanks to David Hochberg and Team Hochberg for their support of this very fine podcast. We're glad that they are back on board with us to start the new year. Homeside Financial, check them out. 56David.com, 855-56-DAVID. Homeside Financial is an equal housing lender. NMLS number 1124061. There is going to be a new Star Trek episode. I just got to call Maggie and be like, hey, can we talk about Discovery now? Because I'm ready to talk about Discovery. That'll be coming up soon.
Peace!
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.